Of course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th and 1.
So, anyways, with that, time jerks.
Welcome to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And this is the huggingest Chiefs podcast in Kansas City. I think that's fair to say, right, Nick?
Maybe on your end, man. Not social distance from everybody, bro.
I'm well aware. But hey, if you guys don't follow us on Twitter, one, shame on you. You know, you can find Nick at Jacob71. You can find me at Todd Palmer. That's Todd with 1D on Twitter. But we had a special guest. You know, a lot of us had to go back into the office this week because I think there was an election or something that was going on. And we had a special guest. Mr. Lombardi came by. Nick, thanks for bringing that in. I know people had a lot of fun getting pictures with your Lombardi trophy.
It's not Mr. Okay, it's just Lombardi. Okay, it goes by one name. It's like Cher or Madonna.
Well, whatever you want to call it, it was awesome. Like, you know, we got to take pictures around the office and, you know.
In correct designated locations that were a part of the proper protocol for anybody listening that is part of
the trophy. And then everyone got to hug it out afterwards. So
there was none on my watch and in my location. So I'm going to distance myself from any inaccuracy statements that Palmer and Todd Palmer company may have stated.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I don't know that hugging is specifically forbidden in the office right now, but we're supposed to social distance. So
I mean, we have a sign that says stay 10 feet apart. So,
right.
So I feel like that pretty much answers that question. I mean, I didn't know they needed to make a sign that says, Todd, you're not allowed to hug anybody, but apparently I'll make one and put it up somewhere around the office.
I would appreciate that. I'll be back in December for a couple of days. But I feel
can
like
let me know those days so I can not be here on this.
Yeah, I'll make sure to tip you off. I feel like, though, you bringing Lombardi in was your way of metaphorically hugging all of us in the office. So I do appreciate that, Nick.
Did you have an unhealthy obsession with hugs. It's very concerning.
Yeah, I do. I'm in therapy for it. Hey, but Chiefs have one more game before the bye week. It's against the Carolina Panthers. And I got to be honest, you know, you look at the record, they're, at, I think, what, 3-5. And they're not a team that does anything like really impressive, but I don't think they're I think they're just an average team in the NFL this year. What do you make of the Panthers?
Right now, I mean, they're below average on the talent that they need to compete in the NFC South. Like they're not where the Saints are. They're not where the Buccaneers are. It's going to take them probably 2 years and a lot of right moves to be able to get to that level. And that'll be at the perfect time because the Saints will be without Drew Brees and kind of starting to fall off. And the Buccaneers will have had to kind of restart after the Brady era that they're trying to do right now. So, I think the Panthers will be at the top again at the right time. And depending on who the Falcons have as their head coach, that'll determine a lot of that. But I think the Panthers will be in position to be competitive within 2 years. Right now, they're trying to build the culture and they're trying to build the system there in a pandemic year. So it's not – for Matt Rhule, it's probably tougher than it would be for a lot of normal rookie NFL head coaches. So he's having to sift through all that. But I think they have a bright future long term with what they're doing. I just don't – it's not going to be against the Chiefs on Sunday.
No, and for those who maybe haven't paid attention, look, they lost to the Raiders and Bucks start the season. Not unexpected with a new coach and a new quarterback. But they rattled off wins against the Chargers. They had a win against what I think is a pretty good Cardinals team. And they split with the Falcons. And they played the Bears and Saints tough. So when I look at it, I feel like the Panthers' defense is a little bit above league average. I think their offense is a little bit below league average, at least through these 8 games. But what do you see from Matt Rhule? And let's start with the defense. Yeah, they're not a team that blitzes a lot. They have, I think, the second lowest blitz percentage in the league. You know, so what is it they do, and does any of it worry you when you think about what the Chiefs offense, how the Chiefs offense matches up?
I mean, looking at the Panthers, when I watch the tape on them, they don't have a legitimate pass rush. So they're not going to be like the Chargers in week 2. They don't have that. but they love to play zone coverage, and they like to sit back at the sticks and just let teams try to move the football down the field on them. So, I mean, in that aspect, I mean, that's just kind of – that's why they're able to stay in games. That's why they're able to stay competitive. That's why they can do what they can right now. But, I mean, they're – and part of it is they're just kind of still partially doing what the scheme originally was before you got there with the – with the cover two concept that Ron Rivera liked to run a lot there. They just, the cover two concept, the way it works though, is if you have four defensive linemen that can make that work, especially like the Chargers do in Los Angeles. So, I mean, that's what you need for that scheme to work. So that's where they're going to have to invest heavily if they want to keep running that type of scheme and keep doing that. So if they can do that, then, I mean, they can run that defense. But otherwise, it's just what I like to call a paper cut defense, to where, I mean, they're just, for the most part, they're going to let teams eat up time. They're going to hope they make a mistake, and they're going to try to stay competitive in football games rather than get blown out. So that's just kind of what I see from them on tape as a defense.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, you know, like I said earlier, they blitz 18% of the defensive snaps. They only get pressure on like 18.6% of the defensive snaps. So that tells me they have to blitz to get pressure, and you know, and they're very judicious in when they choose to do that. But I think that also probably makes them a little bit predictable for Andy Reid. And I think, look, it'll simplify some of the reads that Mahomes has to make probably in the end, which I think plays to the benefit of that offense. I think the wild card for this week is Christian McCaffrey. Only got to see, you know, one and a half games with him in the lineup. But if he is able to come back and he is able to be the guy that we saw last year, who became only the third running back in NFL history to have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in the same season, that can be a difference maker for Carolina, right?
Not against the Chiefs, but in general, that's part of – look, I mean, their offense, in all honesty, like the two players on their offense that it revolves around is McCaffrey when he's on the field, and then Samuel. Like, that's kind of those are their playmakers. That's the guys who can make their offense go as best as it can with what they have talent-wise. So, I mean, that's kind of where you – and Moore does a good job as well at times. Robbie Anderson's still figuring out the offense. So, I mean, they have the speed you want a receiver. It's just like I said, I think long-term they're one of the teams that if they go get the right quarterback, that team can actually become a playoff contender. But Teddy Bridgewater is, from what I've seen, Teddy Bridgewater is not going to be that quarterback for him.
Right, but ultimately I don't see the Chiefs, because of the way they play defense and because of the fact that Bridgewater is an okay quarterback and he's got some weapons, especially if they have McCaffrey. I don't really see the Chiefs necessarily blowing this team out. But I still think that it's a game they should be comfortably in command of throughout. Is that a fair assessment?
I think with their defense, with the way the Panthers defense is, there's two big things that you do to them, and the Chiefs do both of them well. And part of it is, if you do misdirection in the run game, the Panthers want to get downhill. They want to be over-aggressive, just like the Broncos were in some regards. And because of that over-aggressiveness in the run game, you can do the misdirection. You can do the pop pass with Hardman, or the reverse, or the counter, or things of that nature. Look this way, we're running that way. The Chiefs can do that, and they can do that in their sleep. And they can do that with screen passes. So that's where they're going to get a lot of those chunk explosive plays. So because the Chiefs can do that, they can overwhelm them quickly in that first half, to where the Panthers just will have their head spinning. And then at that point, like you said, they have a commanding lead at that point. And then with Bridgewater, look, I mean, the thing with Bridgewater is if you let him stay on the spot, just like Carr, he's fine. He can make the accurate passes. But once you start blitzing, get him off that spot or make him start running, when it's not a design rollout type of thing, then he gets into panic mode. He honestly falls apart. So, I mean, whenever I'm watching tape of certain teams and I'm looking at it, the first thing I'm looking at is, how does a quarterback handle certain situations? Because Steve Spagnuolo is going to relentlessly go after that so that offense can get control and command early. Then the second thing is, what do they do well? And then also, then what do you, what defensively, what are they trying to do? And what are they leaving open that the Chiefs do well at attacking? So, I mean, when you combine all those things together, this team is kind of the perfect, this is kind of the perfect game plan that the Chiefs thrive at being able to put together to get comfortable leads. And my thing is, I think if they can minimize the running game that the Panthers have with Davis, with Samuel, and then also with McCaffrey, if they can minimize that and get after Bridgewater, then that's when I think it becomes more than just a comfortable lead.
Yeah. All right. Hey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about there's a guy named Patrick Mahomes, and he's pretty good at playing quarterback. So we'll be back here in 4 minutes.
Chiefs 41 Action News. The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts every Sunday night after the news and football. Get ready for game days right here with the most in-depth pregame coverage in town. Exclusive interviews, special guests, keys to the game. It's all on your home of the Chiefs. Countdown to kickoff. Live from Arrowhead, Sunday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, you know, we finished the last segment talking about the limitations Teddy Bridgewater has, and the Panthers are going to face the same problem that every team that plays the Chiefs have. And that's basically, you've got to be able to find a way to put up points. If you're going to beat Patrick Mahomes, a healthy Patrick Mahomes has only lost once in his career when the defense gives up fewer than 20 points. Okay. And I'm not counting the 19-13 loss to the Colts last year because, you know, Mahomes had a twice rolled ankle. And I don't think he was healthy for that game, but every other game, you know, the other seven losses, the only time that the defense gave up fewer than 30 was that Chargers game at the end of the 2018 season, when they got the 2-point conversion late, you know, and won 29-28. Every other time the defense has given up 31, 43, 40, you know, earlier this year to the Chargers or to the Raiders, that kind of thing. I'm not convinced that the Panthers are a team that has the weapons and the firepower to keep pace with the Chiefs. So, how would you measure success for, how do you measure success for the Chiefs offense right now? Do you measure it in points per game? Do you measure it in production, or do you just look at, their ability to execute what the defense was giving them? I mean, cause I think, you know, 2 years ago it was, the Chiefs had to score 30 plus every game, and that was kind of the benchmark. What is the benchmark now for this offense?
For me, it's more so not necessarily the opponent that they're playing or what scheme they're playing or things of that nature. It's more along the lines of, me, how many times do they avoid getting in third and long? Are they able to convert the third downs? What are they doing in the red zone? Are they turning those into touchdowns instead of field goals? So, I mean, for me, offensively, that's kind of what I'm looking at. And then also, on another thing I'm looking on the interior offensive line is, what push are they able to get? And how effective are they able to be in the run? Because I think those are the things that are going to decide how long they can be in the playoffs and how long, you know, if they can get back to another Super Bowl, is being able to effectively do that on a weekly basis and find ways to do that when defenses throw different curveballs at them. So for me, it's more so that, I mean, I'm not necessarily looking, I mean, do you want to see him score a lot of points? You bet. But those are kind of more of the benchmarks that I'm looking at, and how many times they had a drive stall. What was the reason for the drive stalling versus, whenever they're able to convert?
One of the things for me, we've seen this team, and sometimes in very un-Andy-like Reed fashion, overpower teams with the ground game. I think Houston was that way. The Buffalo win certainly was that way. And then we've also seen games where, Patrick Mahomes did Patrick Mahomes things and carried the offense. Last week was a good example of that. Are you hoping at some point to see them be able to have a balanced offense, where they can pretty much do whatever they want, run or pass, or do you think it's completely matchup dependent and that Andy crafts his game plan based on that matchup and that it doesn't really matter whether they're beating you with the run one day or beating you with the pass one day, as long as they're finding ways to be efficient and gain those explosive plays and put those points on the board?
I think part of their game plan is to attack the weaknesses of the opponent to be able to get them in comfortable positions. But then I think another piece of it is after they've done that part, I think there's things they like to work on. I think there's things they like to attack that they know they need to improve at snap-wise and get better at experience-wise. So the Buffalo game, I have no doubt in my mind that there was a weakness there with Buffalo that they wanted to attack. But then when they got that, they saw a lot of opportunities to get a lot of good reps in the run game and get some confidence for them and get some of that rhythm that they lost in training camp, and they took full advantage of it. And against the Jets last week, they had a tough time running the football because the Jets kind of have some stout defenders on their D-line, and you know, that was a little bit of a buzzsaw they ran into, so they kind of attacked it a different way, and the Jets were giving them a lot of opportunities to really push the ball down the field, so the Chiefs took advantage of those. So I think the first part of it is they want to do what the matchup part is. I think the second part, like I said, is kind of they want to more so do work on certain things that they know they need to get better at to be able to thrive in the playoffs.
I mean, I think the most complete game they've played on offense was probably that Baltimore game where Mahomes threw for 385 and had 1, 2, 3, 4 touchdowns. And then they also ran the ball okay in that game, 132 yards, averaged about 4.3 yards a carry. But so to me, it's encouraging when you see that, because that's probably the best defense they felt, or certainly one of the best defenses they faced. And they were able to show that balance in a game that I think they probably needed to more than some of the other games they've played. We've also, look, starting with the Buffalo game, we've had a few weeks now to see what that remade interior line with Allegretti
Kilgore.
Kilgore and then Rimmers at right tackle. Certainly looks like Schwartz is going to be out again, and who knows what his availability is going to be after the bye. They were dominant in the Buffalo game, haven't been as dominant since then. What do you make of this group, and are you seeing them – are they playing at the level they need to be playing at for the Chiefs to ultimately get where they want to go?
I think right now the coaching staff's figuring out what blocks they do really well, what can they kind of slowly add in over time that they can get the necessary reps but not give – too much away that they don't have to right now. Because the thing is, like, I mean, every fan wants to see a dominant performance week in and week out. They want to see them just dominate every opponent. But part of that problem is too, in my opinion, is if you put too much of that on tape, then the opponents have a month's worth of seeing how he does against this guy, this size, this guy, that size. And you lose some of that advantage that you may be able to have when you need it the most. So, I mean, I think as an organization, I don't think the Chiefs have built themselves up as a culture and organization now that they don't necessarily have to live week by week like a lot of NFL teams do. They have more so, especially now, they bought a lot of time with that Super Bowl trophy. I think it's more so they have to decide what battles they want to work on to win the overall war. So in my opinion, there's things that they need to take advantage of when they can, but also some things that kind of, yeah, you may have a couple years ago in Christmas, they may have done that Dontari Poe TD just for fun type of thing. But, you know, maybe that's something now that you want to save in a playoff game more so than try to use in a national spotlight on a Christmas night, because you've kind of been to that pinnacle. And if you're wanting to get back to that pinnacle, then, you know, I think for the Chiefs, this is the bigger thing right now, is that the pressure's still on them to be perfect from everybody. The pressure's on everybody to reach that mountaintop and to get back to back, be one of the first NFL teams to get back to back since the Patriots early on. So, or, you know, whoever, you know,
yeah, 17 years ago, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, the pressure's on the Chiefs more so than a lot of other teams in the NFL right now to be this perfect model, to not stumble, to not fall, to not have any issues. So I think in general here right now, the biggest thing is that the Chiefs are having to evolve in some ways to where, one, they're taking every opponent's best shot, they're the new litmus test for how good a, if your culture is headed in the right direction, if your talent's headed in the right direction. And then three, what do you want to use now versus what do you want to save for playoff time when you really need to separate yourself to get to that title again?
And to be clear, the Chiefs still have one of the best offenses in the league and have, to my mind, the best quarterback in the league. So I think they have the luxury of being able to pick and choose what they want to work on and how they want to attack teams, because they know that, that, you know, they've got the weapons and they've got the players to kind of do whatever they want in a way on any given Sunday. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up getting you guys ready for this Chiefs Panthers game.
Get ready for game days right here with the most in-depth pregame coverage in town. Exclusive interviews, special guests, keys to the game. It's all on your home of the Chiefs. Countdown to kickoff. Live from Arrowhead, Sunday mornings at 10. The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts. Every Sunday night after the news and football.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, one thing I did want to touch on, look, Carolina, they're coming off a loss to the Falcons, but it was a Thursday night game. Do those extra days give Carolina any advantage at all? Or do you think, given that Matt Rhule's fairly new to the NFL, you know, and he's going against a future Hall of Fame coach, that it's kind of a moot point? Or are we at the point in the season where Carolina's had enough time and had enough practice, they may be able to start adding it? Like you talked about, the Chiefs being able to hold some things back for the playoffs. Do you think maybe they've held back some things, whether it's blitzes or offensive packages, for when they had McCaffrey back and when they were playing a team like the Chiefs that they needed to maybe surprise and try to make a statement against?
Well, I think Matt Rhule wants to make a statement regardless this week of any scenario, just because he wants to show his players that what they're selling is working. So what they're selling culture-wise, what they're asking them to do, it's working, and that they should all definitely buy in. So for him as a coach, this is kind of one of those games where he's going to throw everything he's got and who he wants to be as a coach to be able to kind of use this to point to in the short term and in the offseason, be like, hey, remember when we beat the defending Super Bowl champs? Or, hey, remember when we held the defending Super Bowl champs to 10? Or, hey, remember when we did this against Super Bowl champs? So, like, he needs to have a good showing to be able to get them to buy into some of the next phases of what he wants to do as a coach with that organization. So, for them, they're gonna try to throw some surprises. They're going to try to throw some stuff at them. But the Chiefs are going to be able to adjust to it. And the Chiefs will be able to attack what they need to. And if they do that, then, you know, like I said, it should be a comfortable game at the end of the day. But if the Panthers had a really, really, really good quarterback, like I think they could give the Chiefs a really strong, close game, like a Justin Herbert type. Yeah. The type of quarterback like that, I think the Chiefs would have a serious situation on their hands. But I just, from what I saw from Teddy and how quickly I saw him crumple in a lot of the games just by doing certain things, Spagnuolo's going to relentlessly go after that.
Yeah. I also want to talk about the Chris Jones situation this week. The Chiefs announced Thursday that there was a staffer who had tested positive. It's unclear whether that test happened Wednesday or Thursday, right? Whether it was from those batch of tests. And then all of a sudden there's reports that Jones was on the reserve COVID list. And usually that would mean that he's been identified as a close contact and is going to have 5 days of negative tests before he can come back. But Jones was back at practice by Friday. So what do you make of that situation? It seems to me like maybe he had some contact with the staffer and then they later determined it wasn't close enough to merit the full quarantine. I don't know, you know, what do you, can you help Chiefs fans understand that?
Well, here's the bigger thing on this situation is one, it's 5 days after they've had contact with whoever's tested positive.
Right.
So what none of us know definitively is, one, who the individual is, regardless of what reports are or are not there.
Right, yeah.
We don't definitively know who the person is, so we don't know if they're in the organization or they're outside the organization, because there's conflicting reports on that. Then, two, the thing is that most NFL players and everybody's getting tested on a daily basis, unlike the rest of us, so they keep good tabs on that time, on that window, on those timetables. And so, they have a really in-tune situation to where they have timetables that they don't have to worry about as much, you know, in terms of, well, was it this day or this day, you know, those type of things. There's not as much guesswork with what they have set up in the NFL right now.
Right. The guys have to wear trackers.
That's the next thing I was gonna get to, is they have tracers when they're in at the facility. And what's so big about that, I know that may sound, you know, invasion of privacy, this and that or whatever, but what's so big about that is, you know, the paths they took, and if somebody does get it, you know where the cleaning crew needs to go and do deep cleaning and where that needs to be done, so you don't just do an entire building if you don't have to. So that's efficiency in that regard. And then also lets you know, without the player or the staff member or whoever, they know they were around this person for this amount of time, so this fits under this criteria, this circumstance. And because of that, that helps take some of that guesswork out there. Because what I'll reveal personally, and you know about it, but I haven't talked a lot about it, is I personally had a family member that had that tested positive for it, or two family members actually. So then the criteria that I had to go through was, when was I last around that person? How much contact did I have? There was, you know, and I don't have those things available to me like that organization does.
You weren't wearing a tracker at the time?
No, unfortunately. I mean technically my cell phone would be a tracker, but
I have a tracker on you. I don't know if you know this, but I it's just on you, not on the rest of your family.
Yeah, so but I'm saying, like, I don't have as definitive, you know, a definitive thing as what the NFL organizations do to be able to know, okay, they all tested negative on these days, they all were around this person this amount of time, they were all this, they were all that. So I mean, from this perspective, with the Chris Jones aspect, him getting put on there, my assumption was, okay, when he gets put on there, it's going to be depending on when the day was when he had contact that they had to investigate and search and go through. Yeah. They're going to have to be precautionary on that part, and then they can go through organizationally what they need to check and look all that and see if it meets the criteria. And then if it was somebody technically outside of the organization, whenever his last contact was with that person for those 5 days, you know, from that 5 day span. And then also you already have the test technically every single day. So hypothetically, if it's somebody that was outside of the organization, he's already been doing those tests, so you already have those results that have been negative. And then that contact, once it meets that point, then in my opinion, you've probably matched, or, you know, you've hit that criteria that you needed. Because the thinking, misunderstanding people have is that when you get put on that list, it's 5 days from that list. No, it's 5 days. Originally, the whole purpose of it is it gives teams a chance to be able to investigate and research what they need to. But then also, above everything else, it gives them from 5 days from that contact, not necessarily they're on that list, they're on there for 5 days type of thing. I hope I covered everything. I'm not.
Well, yeah. So it could have just been coincidence that the staff member positive and Chris Jones going to the reserve COVID list were on the same day. Correct. And if Jones' contact was actually with, say, a family member on Sunday, and then he tested negative Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they would have only had to wait for his negative test Friday to give him the 5 days and bring him back. Had it been the staffer and had it been on Thursday, and that's when the clock started, he would have been out for Carolina. But it looks like he's going to be available since he returned to practice on Friday. And look, that I think helped. I know I whined the last couple of podcasts about the Chiefs not getting enough sacks because they're around league average with 17 through eight games so far. But, you know, the funny thing is when you do a deeper dive, the Chiefs are actually, they rank third in pressure percentage.
Yeah, dude, their pressures are through the roof, man, when you watch the game. Yeah,
and they rank fifth in QB hurry percentage, and they rank seventh in QB knockdown rate among all NFL defensive lines. So they're still not converting those to sacks necessarily, but they're definitely one of the most disruptive units, especially when you've got a healthy Chris Jones and a healthy Frank Clark out there moving the pocket. And like you said, forcing a quarterback like a Teddy Bridgewater off his spot and forcing him to make throws with guys in his face on the move you know, and just making life more difficult for the quarterback. So am I making too much about the lack of sacks then?
Only if they keep winning. Yes. Now, if they lose, then people immediately have that in one of their top three complaints, other than third downs, red zone, and any missed opportunity that cost them the game.
Right. Or phantom or non-calls on defensive pass interference.
I mean, you could add to the list if you want to.
All right. Hey, man, I think we're in a good spot getting people ready for the Panthers game. I know you expect them to win 77-0 like every week, right?
I that is a prediction that you make. I have never made that myself. That is this. My opinion is not a reflection of Todd Palmer's reckless opinion, so please don't take them.
anything else you want to add about this matchup?
No, I got a sandwich waiting for me that is getting cold now.
Sandwich in a high school football game sounds like a good time in how does Gary say it? In the Friday Big Ten,
the Big Ten.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're set.
That's how you end a podcast, Todd. That's how you end a podcast. There, you crushed it. Could have just said we'll see you, but no.
All right.
Stretch out that awkwardness.
All right. Well, we'll hug it out later. Okay. Until then, take care, kids.